little bird, he told me so. He said, come on, get on the go. Open your eyes, the sky's full of butterflies.
We will talk about a federal plan to save the monarch butterfly this hour. It includes planting a billion milkweed seeds along a Duluth to Texas prairie corridor that is traveled by the butterflies. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 22nd. Our guest is a professor with the University of Minnesota, a monarch expert, and we will talk about the threats that are facing the monarch butterfly and how this pollinator plan may help. And we welcome your questions, and we wonder how you are helping, or if you are helping, to save the monarch butterfly. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Karen Oberhauser, a professor in the Department of Fisheries, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology at the University of Minnesota. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's great to be with you. I always love talking to people from Wisconsin since I grew up there.
That's right. And thank you for being back with us again. Well, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio.
Thank you.
We got so much reaction to this story on our Facebook page already. People are They're frightened because they're not seeing as many monarchs this summer, and they've been sort of seeing a decline over the years, and they are hoping something can be done to save the monarch. Tell us what this White House plan is that is intended to help the monarch and other pollinators.
Well, what you said is so correct, that people really notice the decline of monarchs. They might not notice there are lots of other things declining out there, but monarchs are something that people really notice. And I think that's what has gained the attention of the White House and other policymakers, that, you know, this is something that people care about. So the White House issued a memorandum earlier this year that basically recognizes that bees, in particular, as great pollinators, are declining, both native bees and honeybees, and monarchs. And this memorandum says, it kind of lays out some of the reasons for the decline, and then says that the federal agencies, so each agency doing what it can under its jurisdiction, should work as best as they can to preserve habitat for monarchs and other pollinators, and to do other things in terms of education and outreach. So it's a big, sweeping plan, and from someone who's working on monarch conservation for many years, it's really made a difference having all of this attention from the federal government.
And so this is a plan that is in place. These federal agencies are coordinating. It doesn't need any, I don't know, passage from Congress?
No, this was a federal or a executive action, working with the different agencies that are under, so the Department of Transportation, the Environmental Protection Agency, USDA, Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of the Interior. So at this level, it's a federal action, but this has really moved into the states. So we're working with the state wildlife agencies. So in Wisconsin, this would be the Department of Natural Resources, and Minnesota, that has different names in other states. But they also have a federal kind of group that works together. So starting at the federal level, this is moving down into the states and other jurisdictions that are trying to do what they can to preserve monarchs in the land and the actions that they control.
And the part that sticks out to me is that we're talking about building a butterfly highway, or at least providing a billion milkweed plants for monarch butterflies along this corridor that they travel.
Right. So it's huge. I mean, a billion is a big number, obviously. And what we've done, thanks to citizens who have been collecting data for a program that we run at the University of Minnesota called the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project, and many other Monarch Citizen Science programs, people in Wisconsin and Minnesota and all throughout the eastern part of the United States have been collecting data that have allowed us to calculate basically how many plants produce a monarch. And we've calculated that it's a little over 30. So, and that's not because a monarch caterpillar, while it's growing out, actually growing up, actually eats 30 plants. But on average, you get one monarch off of 30 plants, and you know the others maybe aren't used or predators eat them. So, you get about one monarch for every 30 milkweed plants. And we've just kind of done the back of the envelope calculations that allow us to estimate how many plants we need to get the population back to the level that we consider safe and sustainable.
So who's supposed to plant these billion milkweed plants?
Well, that's where everyone comes in. Basically, what we've done is we've identified the areas in the United States where most monarchs used to come from, and that's the central prairie corridor that cuts through Wisconsin, kind of starting in Wisconsin and Minnesota and moving straight down through the middle of the United States. This is what used to be the tall grass prairie, and this is where monarchs were, through Texas into northern Mexico and then down through Mexico into central Mexico, where they overwinter. So this is where we need most of the milkweed, but certainly further east than that and west of that, monarchs are produced. So we need the milkweed everywhere. And this can be in people's yards, along roadsides, in set-aside land for conservation, so CRP or Conservation Reserve Program land or EQIP land. There are lots of federal set-aside programs where farmers will set aside land that has conservation concern and get paid something by the federal government not to plant that, but instead to use it for conservation purposes. So we're looking at that kind of land, at utility rights of ways, people's yards, anywhere we can convince people to plant milkweed. And this can be both public land and private land.
Great. And remind us why it is milkweed that we want to plant. Why is milkweed so critical for the monarch?
So that's a great question. We can start at square one here. Monarch adults will get nectar from many, many kinds of flowers. So having flowers and many native plants especially produce lots of nectar. So that's what the adults need. But female monarchs only lay their eggs on milkweed, and milkweed is the only kind of plants that the caterpillars basically recognize as food and eat. So they've evolved to be specialists on milkweed. Luckily, there are 112 species of milkweed that are native to North America. So we have lots of choices about the species of milkweed that we plant. Most people are probably familiar with common milkweed, which is a little bit weedy. I have a lot of it in my garden, but some people are a little concerned because it kind of spreads around pretty quickly. But there are other species that aren't quite as aggressive and are actually lovely garden plants that people really enjoy having.
And the female monarch will lay eggs in the milkweed. Tell us the biology here. When does she lay those eggs, and when are those, you know, how does it work?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So if we start with a female monarch emerging from her chrysalis, she doesn't have eggs that are ready to lay right when she emerges. Some butterflies emerge with what we call a full complement of eggs ready to go, so they can mate right away and start laying eggs. But a female monarch is about 4 or 5 days old before she mates and lays eggs. So once she mates, she'll just start laying eggs, and she lives approximately another month. And during that time, she's just constantly looking for milkweed plants on which to lay her eggs and nectar plants to provide her own nutrition. So she flies around, and she'll cover big areas during this time. She usually, but not always, only lays one egg on a plant. So she'll lay an egg and then flutter off to the next plant, and that's the the extent of her parental care for her offspring.
And we have just a minute before a news break, and we'll talk more after news. But then, how long do those eggs, I guess, gestate?
Right. The eggs hatch about 4 days after they're laid, and they're about the size of a pinhead, so a caterpillar about the same size hatches out of them.
Oh.
And then over the course of about 10 or 11 days, that caterpillar grows and grows until it's the big, fat, juicy, yellow and black and white striped caterpillar that people are familiar with. And then it pupates and makes the lovely jade green and gold chrysalis. It's a chrysalis for 10 or 11 days, and then the adult butterfly comes out.
And there we have it. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about saving the monarch butterfly.
I have a friend and she's a butterfly. She got some power to flower, drinking sweet nectar.
We are talking about the monarch butterfly and a federal pollinator protection plan that is underway to help protect not only the monarch, but other pollinators. We are talking with a researcher of the monarch, an expert in the monarch, Karen Oberhauser, a professor in the Department of Fisheries, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology at the University of Minnesota, is here with us to answer your questions about monarch butterflies and this plan to help save monarch butterflies. One of the highlights of this plan is that it calls for 1 billion milkweed plants along a Duluth to Texas corridor that is traveled by the butterflies. And we could start seeing this butterfly highway as soon as this fall. Cheryl on Facebook says, the monarchs have been declining each year here, but this is the first year I have not seen a single one. So sad to think that the upcoming generations will not enjoy these precious species. Glad to see something is being done. I hope it's not too late. Karen, is it too late?
Well, I think if we all work together, we can prevent that sad event for our children and their children. I'm a conservation biologist, and essentially I feel like conservation biology is the science of hope. So I wouldn't be in this field if I didn't have hope. So hopefully, Cheryl, that won't come to pass. But really, it is going to take a concerted effort. We do know, on the hopeful side, that there have been times in the past that the monarch population has been quite low, not as low as it is now, but certainly low, and it has rebounded pretty quickly. One female monarch butterfly can lay up to 500 eggs in the wild in her lifetime. So that, there is a pretty big reproductive potential there. So if the habitat is there and if we have weather that's conducive to monarch reproduction, and if this habitat is spread out over large areas, I really think we can bring them back. Maybe not to the numbers that we saw as short a time as 20 years ago, but certainly, maybe what we were seeing a decade ago, we can start to see those numbers again.
Yeah, so tell us what's threatening the monarch butterfly. Why is it that we saw such a decline in populations?
Well, there have been a lot of things happening to monarchs, and I think as for most species whose numbers are declining, it's habitat loss. So humans take up a lot of habitat, and what we really need to do is learn to share that habitat with other organisms and make sure that we don't just, produce a landscape that only we can live on. The big thing that changed over the last, say, 15 years is that there actually used to be a lot of common milkweed growing in between the rows of row crops, of mostly corn and soybean crops. So there wasn't a lot of milkweed in these fields because farmers were using weed control methods, but there was some. And because the Corn Belt is basically what used to be the tall grass prairie, that was the important area for monarchs to grow. And then with the advent of genetically modified corn and soybeans that allowed farmers to spray herbicides on these crops after the crops had come up, so the herbicides no longer hurt the crops, so the farmers could spray, we lost the milkweed in these fields. Now, of course, farmers are going to do what they can to control weeds. So what we need to do is estimate the magnitude of that loss, and we've done that. We've estimated how much milkweed was lost from this habitat, and that's another way we came up with our target restoration goals of the billion milkweed plants is what we've lost. So we need to think of that agricultural landscape and think of what areas are still left that we can use for habitat. And we're really working a lot with the agricultural community, both the farmers' associations and the seed producers' associations, to try to solve that problem together.
Judy called in to say that she heard milkweed is toxic to farm animals and that some milkweed is considered invasive. Is that true?
Well, you know, an invasive plant is just one that's growing where we don't want it. So milkweed is not, it's not a non-native plant. So usually we think of invasive plants as non-native plants like wild parsnip or buckthorn, you know, plants that have been brought from other areas and have been brought here and don't have any natural enemies, so they just kind of take over. Milkweed is, especially some species like common milkweed, is weedy, so it will, you know, sometimes spread around into areas where people don't want it. A lot of people love it because it does host monarchs. So it's not invasive in the sense that it's a non-native plant that's taking over because it doesn't have any natural enemies. In terms of the toxicity, it is mildly toxic. So farm animals will usually avoid it. So if you look at pasture is actually great milkweed habitat because animals that are grazing in a field will graze the other plants and leave the milkweed. So you'll see, you know, land that's or plants that are grazed on with nice, healthy milkweed plants sticking up in between them because it tastes bitter. So farm animals don't like it. The only time that you really see animals eating it would be when there are too many of them and they're not moved around enough, so they have nothing else to do but eat the plants that they don't really like. The toxicity of milkweed is really pretty interesting because the monarchs, by eating milkweed, gain toxicity, so they taste bitter and bad to predators that might eat them. So a lot of birds and other predators will avoid monarchs because they basically taste bad.
That's a good defense mechanism.
Right.
Noah wonders about, we're talking about the, you know, habitat loss here in the U.S. He says, what about the status of the habitat in Mexico where monarchs migrate every year? Are they protected there?
So that's a great point, and that used to be our biggest concern because monarchs leave this huge area in the United States and migrate through the United States and Mexico to a relatively small area. I mean, the total area that the monarchs are staying on over the course of the winter is actually very small. So we used to be very concerned about habitat loss in Mexico and thought that was really the main sort of the Achilles heel of the monarch population. All of that land is protected by federal law in Mexico, but there still is some logging that occurs illegally. So there's a lot of work being done to protect that land. It's not perfect, so that's something else. So, you know, when I said habitat loss, the biggest current driver probably is what's going on in the United States. But monarchs need that habitat through their migratory route. We've just been talking about the breeding area now, but they need habitat as they're migrating and as they're overwintering. And it really does face threats in all of those areas.
I talk a little bit about this migration cycle of the monarch.
Yeah, so before the break, we talked about what I call the individual life cycle, so egg to caterpillar to pupa or chrysalis to adult. So that's what individual monarchs go through. But the population has this kind of what I call an annual life cycle. And if we start with monarchs right now, breeding in Wisconsin and Minnesota and many other areas, the monarchs that are flying around right now are laying eggs, and those eggs will grow up into the butterflies that will migrate. So we're starting the last generation of the year up here, and the butterflies that emerge after about the middle of August will migrate, and they'll just kind of join this wave of monarchs moving south through this migratory flyway through Texas. And they'll start leaving here in late August. They'll fly through Texas, through the top half of Mexico, and get to these overwintering sites in late October or November. So it takes them 2.5 months to make this migratory journey. Along that way, they need to be eating a lot of nectar from nectar sources. Then once they get to the overwintering sites in Mexico, they just basically sit in the trees for throughout the whole winter. So they're November, December, January, February, and then they start leaving in the middle of March. And then those very same butterflies fly north and repopulate the southern half of this eastern breeding range. So they move into Texas, move north up to about Kansas. Some of them move east over to the East Coast. And then they lay eggs in the southern part of the United States, and it's their offspring that come back here in late May, early June. So we would not see the very same monarchs that left here return here in the spring. And then they go through about three generations of non-migratory monarchs, and then the cycle starts again. So it's just an amazing cycle. I mean, it's really so incredible, because these monarchs, of course, have never made the trip before. There's no other monarchs to be teaching them the flight, so this is totally ingrained in their brains, and they return to these same sites every winter.
We are talking about efforts to save the monarch butterfly. Our guest is Karen Oberhauser, a professor in the Department of Fisheries, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology at the University of Minnesota, talking with us about the federal plan that includes planting about 1 billion milkweed plants along this butterfly highway, this prairie corridor from Wisconsin to Texas. So what questions do you have about the monarch, and are you trying to do anything to save the monarch? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's take a call from Mike in Slinger. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Question. Where do you get milkweed pods? Can you get them at your local nursery, or what, the plants? And are they big, tall, small, inches? You know, what do you do with them? How do you plant them, and how do you take care of them?
Sure, that's a great question, Mike. Thanks for asking that. Well, you can get milkweed plants in a lot of places. One thing you can do is go along roadsides or other areas where you see milkweed plants growing, if you need to ask permission, but if they're in a roadside, you probably don't need to worry about that, and you can collect seeds in the fall. You can scatter seeds in areas they need to be cold during the winter before they'll germinate. You can put them in flats or pots and leave them outside, and they'll germinate in the spring, and so you can start your own plants that way, get them from friends or neighbors. You can purchase seeds from many different seed sources. There are a lot of growers that focus on prairie, on native prairie plants, so you can buy seeds or plants from them, what we call plugs, which are the plants that have already germinated, but they're not very big yet. That's the most sure way to get them going. Or you can buy pretty mature plants from nurseries. The one thing that you want to watch out for is that you don't want them to be treated with systemic insecticides. A lot of plants that you grow in some nurseries have been treated so they look good when you buy them, so no insects will have nibbled on them. But then they'll be harmful to the caterpillars once they hatch. You can get the most commonly available milkweed species from nurseries are one called swamp milkweed, but people don't really like that name, so it's sometimes called red milkweed. Or,
red milkweed is a little better than swamp.
It's a little better than swamp, but we've always called it swamp. Mm-hmm. That's Asclepias incarnata. That's a beautiful garden plant that has these pretty kind of pinkish-purple flowers that have a great smell. So that's a nice one, swamp milkweed or red milkweed. Another one that's fairly easy to purchase is called butterfly weed, and that has beautiful orange flowers that are just bright, bright orange. And that's another great nectar and host plant. The monarchs, if there are other species available in their garden, in your garden, they'll avoid that one because the leaves are a little hairy. But the monarchs will still lay eggs on it, and the caterpillars will still eat it. And then there are lots of other, if you go to the native plant stores, basically anything that has the genus name Asclepias will provide food for monarchs. And people are getting more and more interested, so there are a lot of really fun species that weren't available in the past. There's a species called whorled milkweed that's a great one to grow. Anything that says milkweed is a good host plant for monarchs.
Well, I want to thank my friend Anne, who supplied me with some milkweed seeds the last time we did a program on this, and I did plant them, but I'm sorry to say I failed.
it is a lot easier if you get the plants to start with.
Yeah.
Just throwing the seeds out there in an existing garden doesn't work as well, so what I'll usually do is start them in flat. So I get potting soil, put them in. If they haven't been cold stratified, I'll leave them out for a winter. So I kind of baby them along until they're ready to put in the garden.
I will try again. Let's take a call next from Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I've had a wildflower garden on my hill here. It's a real steep hill for about 25 years. It rutted, and it's a real steep hill. We put it in long, long time ago. And we have milkweeds in there. We have Queen of the Prairie. We got prairie sunflowers. It's all wildflowers. And we live along the Little Menominee River here in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And the church behind us has water retention ponds. It's a wild area. It's northwest side of Milwaukee.
I need to rush you a little bit because we're coming up on the newscast.
We already saw two monarchs this year, my son has informed me. My husband hasn't seen any. The yard used to be full of them.
Yeah.
Well, you're noticing what a lot of people are noticing. The population is smaller, so fewer monarchs are going to find your yard. But what you're doing is exactly right, and that's what we just need more and more people to do, to change at least part of their yard. A lawn full of Kentucky bluegrass, that's an invasive species. You know, that's something that's not native here, and that is not providing food for anything. And so, you know, just pulling a little bit of that yard like you've done on your hill is exactly what people need to do. And, you know, maybe you're not seeing as many monarchs this year, but I bet you're seeing other species of butterflies. So that yard is providing you with some joy, and it's also providing a lot of insects and then the birds that eat those insects with habitat. So you're doing a great thing.
Thank you, Laura, for what you're doing and for calling in. By the way, Julie posted a picture on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page of a monarch on a milkweed plant with the slug today, east of Madison. Wonderful. So, hey, you want to post a picture of your milkweed or your monarchs? Go ahead, the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And if you have a question for our guest, Karen Oberhauser, professor in the Department of Fisheries, Wildlife, and Conservation Biology at the University of Minnesota, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Little bird, he told me so. He said, come on, get on the go. Open your eyes, the sky is full of butterflies.
We are talking about a plan to save the butterflies, the monarch butterfly, and other pollinators. It's the federal pollinator protection plan, and we're talking about how you can help too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Lots of callers. Barbara in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to share an interesting thing that I noticed about the monarchs, and that is they seem to come back year after year to where they hatched and flew away from. Last summer, my husband planted some milkweeds in our yard, and the plants have multiplied beautifully. And last summer, we collected the eggs and took care of the caterpillars so that the spiders don't eat them and those other bugs don't eat them right after they hatch. And we released 121 butterflies last summer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it was really easy. And it's amazing. Every spring, late May, early to mid-June, loads of eggs. I mean, the plants are just peppered with those teeny little white eggs, and I collect them up and keep them from getting eaten by the other garden predators, and it's very, very easy to do.
Well, Karen Oberhauser, what about that? Should we go beyond providing milkweed, but collect and protect the eggs?
So I think that's something a lot of people do. I do it myself. I have a kitchen table covered with little containers full of monarchs that I've collected from my yard as eggs and caterpillars. So what Barbara is doing, a lot of people do, and as she said, it's a lot of fun. And basically, when you do that, you're saving that individual monarch's life. The odds are you are, because there are lots of predators, about 2 or 3% of them make it from the egg stage to the adult stage. So as long as this is done carefully and under really clean conditions, and it sounds like Barbara's doing a really great job at it, it's a good thing to do, and it teaches us a lot. So I have nothing against rearing monarchs. We have a website called the Monarch Joint Venture website, monarchjointventure.org. We have a lot of little informational sheets about rearing monarchs, and we have one on rearing monarchs safely. So kind of how you ensure that you're bringing them in to save their lives, and you know, you don't let their milkweed grow dry up, you don't keep them under dirty conditions. So that's a great thing to do. It certainly isn't going to save monarchs, you know, from a population perspective, because, you know, we could never rear the millions and millions of monarchs that fly down to Mexico each year. But I think it's a great educational thing to do, and like I said, you're saving those individual monarchs' lives. And there must be something when you talk, Barbara, about monarchs coming back. It's not the same individuals, and it's probably not even their offspring that come back to your yard. But the location of your yard and the plants that you have growing there must be just perfect for monarchs, because you are seeing them year after year. And having, you know, getting 120 monarchs or more out of your garden means that you have a really great place for monarchs. There are a lot of people. You said you're from Milwaukee. There are lots of people. I have a good friend, Jim, who lives in Milwaukee, who has a whole yard full of just incredible different species of milkweed, and he's shared some of those with me. So, you know, I think Milwaukee seems to be kind of a hub of people who really care about monarchs, and that's great to hear.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara, and congratulations on your success, more than 120 monarchs.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Other callers, Mary in Pewaukee is with us. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Joy, and thank you to your guest for the great subject. I also saw a monarch. I don't know how many we actually have. Ours started with maybe one from bird dropping, and then we distributed those seeds around our yard. We happen to have only, you know, maybe 3/4 of an acre, but we have a lot of area that, you know, the milkweed can grow. And so it has. We now have maybe 50 plants, and I think people should post articles of this sort on Facebook and share those and just get the word out so people are aware and that they can do this themselves.
Yeah. Thank you, Marianne. So do you also spread those seeds in other places?
Yes, we continue throughout our yard to spread those seeds. And so, yeah, we went from the one plant to now I think about 50. I just recently kind of counted most of them. So.
Excellent. And I was also thinking of, in fact, I think my producer, Christy Taylor, talked about spreading some seeds from a milkweed pod in a prairie near her home or something like that. Can we just plant milkweed, without tending to it?
Well, you know, milkweed in the wild isn't tended to, and it does really well. I would assume that Mary probably has common milkweed if it's spreading around her yard like that. So that's probably a great testimony to the ease. Once it gets started, it's pretty easy to keep it going. And, you know, I think that what these last two callers, Mary and Barbara, are doing is just such a good example that, you know, you can have the joy of these things coming to your yard, but, you know, use the land as such a good example of people sharing their space with other organisms. So, you know, this is what we need to do, and this needs to spread, you know, out of the cities and the suburbs into the agricultural landscape because that takes up a lot of space. I mean, we can't just have the cities as the remaining spots for monarchs, but we need the same thing to be happening in people's yards who live out in the country as well.
Yeah. Is there anything we can do as individuals beyond planting milkweed?
So planting the milkweed is a great way to start, and this can be people who have their own land, their yards, or other land that they have control over, but a lot of people can work with nature centers or schools or wherever it is they work. So people actually have a lot of kind of control or convincing power over quite a lot of land when you think of all of the places that you live and work. So that's one thing, is creating the habitat. Another thing is learning what you can and kind of what I call educating and advocating. So talking to your friends and neighbors and colleagues about what you know about monarchs, about the importance of habitat, so then you can kind of spread the word that way, share your joy in raising them. You can talk if you live out in the country and you know the people in your township who are in charge of mowing the roadside. A lot of our milkweeds that are left are along roadsides, and sometimes that gets mowed just about now when the caterpillars are, when we have our peak of eggs and caterpillars on the milkweed plant. So changing the timing of mowing is a big thing. So that's another form of education. Another thing that people can do, and maybe Barbara and Mary would be interested in this since they have so much milkweed, is join a citizen science project. So we've learned a lot. We continue to learn a lot about monarch biology from people that collect data on when they see monarchs and what they're seeing. One we have here is the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project, and that's easy to find on the web. And you just go out and look at your milkweed plants and count how many eggs and caterpillars you see on how many plants. But there are lots of other projects as well where people track the migration, track the number of adults they're seeing. So there are lots of things people can do there. So that's the third thing. And finally, providing financial support for organizations that preserve habitat. We have some monarch nonprofit organizations that take donations. We do what we can to preserve monarchs, the Monarch Joint Venture, the Monarch Butterfly Fund, but really any organization that is working on habitat preservation. Because really, when we create habitat for monarchs, it's just not monarchs, or it's not just monarchs that we're helping. It's many, many other organisms as well. So monarchs are just the species that's the noticeable one that we really care about, but that milkweed hosts other things as well, the nectar plants that you bring in, the other host plants. So really, you're just creating a little space of really heaven for all of these other organisms that have lost habitat.
Yeah. So do you think that the goal of increasing the population of monarchs to 225 million in 5 years is realistic?
Well, I guess we'll see, won't we? It's really, I mean, it's doable, and we've done the number crunching, looked at the land that's available, looked at what has milkweed currently, what doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's a big, huge goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, really what we just need to do is plant as much as we can, because that's what that billion really means. We take every piece of available habitat and add milkweed and nectar plants to it. So yeah. It's a big reach.
I'm sorry, besides the planting of milkweed on an individual and I guess a farmer basis, are other policy changes needed to be put in place?
Well, we mentioned a little bit briefly roadside. So roadside mm-hmm. management is a big one. And, you know, it's not necessarily the big superhighways and freeways that we want to focus on, although that is habitat as well. But it's there is some potential for those monarchs to be hit by cars. But, you know, certainly I think that they produce more monarchs than they would kill. But really we want to focus on the county roads and the smaller state roads, because that's where we get a lot of mileage and a lot of great potential habitat. So that would be departments of transportation at both the state and federal and down to the county level that would be in charge of that. So that's one area. The Department of the U.S. Forest Service, or when the Department of Agriculture, so the Department of Agriculture on a big scale, can have policies that support farmers in planting habitat, you know, in other land, you know, that isn't row crops. Mm-hmm. So, you know, federal support for pollinator-friendly policies is another thing that can be done by government.
Because we're out of time, Karen, is there a place people can go for more information on how we can help save monarchs?
Sure. The Monarch Joint Venture website is just monarchjointventure.org, and that has a lot of information both about monarch biology, and then there's a tab called Helping Monarchs.
We'll
and that
check
has
it out.
A lot of great suggestions.
Thank you so much. Karen Oberhauser is with the University of Minnesota. This is the Ideas Network.